Good health is a crown worn by the healthy that only the ill can see. Your health really is your wealth. Join us for the next hour as we explore disease and attaining and maintaining good health. This is Dis-Chem Medical Monday, brought to you by Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. It's Monday, well, or Sunday, if you're listening to this on Sunday. And it's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show here on 101.9 Chai FM. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I'm joined today by Professor Brett Kluperman, Distinguished Professor of Polymer Sciences at Stellenbosch, and absolutely fascinating reading up about the professor's work. We're talking male contraception, and I think this is something that's vitally important and very, very empowering to men. I mean, not everybody can do what I do and just use being ugly as a form of contraception. I'm kidding. So let us have your questions for the professor and on our studio WhatsApp number, and we will get them answered for you. You can get us on 061-895-1019. We'll be back with the professor after these words.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. I'm down in beautiful Cape Town. And when I was chatting to the professor, I said, well, if I would have known, I would have come past Stellenbosch. And he said, nope, he's in the Netherlands. So we got quite a diverse show in the studios in Johannesburg, the wonderful things of technology. And talking about technology, Professor, I can't wait to get into this very, very important subject. But firstly, welcome to the show. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Really excited about this because I think it's something that's very important and very empowering to men as well, because the options we've had up until now have been sort of vasectomy and condoms, and that's really all that men have had available to them. So I think let's jump straight into it. Firstly, Prof, can you give us a little bit of your background for context for the listeners, and then what is polymer science?
Yeah, so my background is in polymer science, and polymers are large molecules. So I'm in the Department of Chemistry and Polymer Science at Stellenbosch University. My background is that I've been working initially after my studies for 9 years at a company doing research on certain types of polymers. After that, felt that academic research was more of my passion, and moved back. That was all in the Netherlands, to academia. I joined Eindhoven University of Technology. And then in 1998, I got in contact with Stellenbosch University, and I was a visiting professor for a number of years. And then in 2007, I joined Stellenbosch University as a research chair, where you got a nice budget from the government, which pays your own salary, pays your research, and no large teaching obligations. So I did that for 15 years. And then in the last 4 or 5 years, I've been working as a, well, you'd call it normal professor. I'm doing my teaching duties. I'm teaching part of first year chemistry. I'm teaching the honors students, polymer science, polymer chemistry. So that's more or less it. In the meantime, I still have a research group. It's not as large as it used to be, but we focus on making polymers largely for biomedical applications, and then investigating properties of the polymers, how you can, by manipulating the structure of the polymer, how you can manipulate the properties of those.
Absolutely awesome. And I think for me, just on a personal question I want answered before we move on to male contraception, how is South Africa doing in this sort of cutting edge science? Where are we sort of in the world market?
Yeah, so for me, when I moved across from the Netherlands to South Africa, one of the very important things for me personally was that the level of research that I could do was at the same level, you know, globally competitive. And I have to say that it is. If you look at universities like UCT, Stellenbosch, Wits, they're all really at the forefront of science in their respective disciplines. So I've and students in general are very well trained when they enter university. So yes, I've got no complaints whatsoever about the environment, about the opportunities that I have, about the equipment that we have available. Everything from a research point of view is actually working quite well.
Oh, fantastic. Now, why the field of male contraception? What was behind leading you down this path, and why is it so important?
Yeah, so like many of these things, this sort of happened coincidentally. A very long time ago, I think I was still working at the company, so we're now talking like early 1990s or so, we saw a patent application of a male contraceptive developed in India based on a polymer that I was working on at the time. And we actually laughed at it initially, and I didn't think much of it, and I heard not much of it. But lo and behold, about 10 or so years ago, I get an email from an institute in America. They know I'm working on this specific polymer, and they are using that now for male contraceptives. So it was not the same, but it was certainly based on that original work in India. And they asked, can they talk to me about issues they have with their formulation, and would I be willing to sort of consult with them to help and improve their product? So I started doing that for a bit, maybe 1 or 2 years. Then they were doing everything on a very low budget, but it caught my attention and it triggered my attention. And what I then started to do, I was still on the research chair. I said, for one student, let me just try this out and try and improve on what they currently have. I initially proposed a project to them. They didn't want to fund it. So I started doing it, on my own. We then eventually filed a patent on it, and I contacted the guys in the US again, and I said, well, the problems that you initially had, we may have solved for you. And we started talking again, and we're still discussing with them, potential ways of collaborating. So, but like I said, many of these things just happen more or less coincidentally, because the polymer that they were using is one of the main research themes in my group and has been for a very, very long time. So then by looking in the scientific literature, they came across my name and sort of got me involved in this whole project.
With regards to contraception, what is the practical use? How does it work? Is it something that's orally,
yes,
orally and so on?
Good question. It's actually very close to what you do in terms of vasectomy, but it is now reversible. So what you do in terms of vasectomy is you cut the vas deferens and you tie it off, and you remove a little piece so that it doesn't grow back together. What you do with this male contraceptive is via a minimally invasive procedure. You get an injection of a hydrogel inside the vas deferens, and it effectively blocks the passage of sperm cells. So the hydrogels, it's got the substance of jelly pudding, and so it's very wobbly type of material with a lot of water inside. And what it does, it got a sort of a molecular mesh, you could say, that stops sperm cells from passing, but it still has the possibility for liquid to go through. Mm-hmm. And that apparently is very important to circumvent some of the side effects that vasectomy can have.
Right. Also, we're not always 100% successful.
Correct. Yeah, so what these guys in the US said, that is that this technology is more or less as effective as vasectomy, but it is reversible. So you can redissolve that gel and then free up the passage again and be fertile again.
Because, I mean, that's such an important thing. Life changes, relationships end. Perhaps people meet new partners. They may want to have the opportunity to start new families. Is there anything Professor, in your experience that you can share with us, just before we go to ads, that sort of that stories that you heard where, this would be a life changer for people.
Well, I've said to many people, as soon as this is like really available, there are now two companies. One is, I think, is sort of early market. They have done their clinical trials and they are now sort of entering the market. The other company, the company that I'm working with, are doing their clinical trials right now. But I said that as soon as this is really on the market, I don't think there will be any vasectomies anymore because you can effectively get the same end result, but now with the add-on that is reversible. So, it will definitely, and from what I hear from the companies is that men are lining up to be part of the clinical trials.
Yes. With regards to the vasectomy and men having the opportunity to, make a decision whether when they're entering into a physical relationship with someone, we're just going to go to ads now. But I want to come back sort of with the question that, in your opinion, how do you think this is going to be changing people's lives in terms of making the decision that, maybe even in VAS, in university or in high school, that this is something that you want to do, let's say, up until marriage. Let's touch on this when we're back from these ads.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Good morning. Welcome back. We've been chatting with Professor Brett Kluperman, a distinguished professor of polymer sciences at Stellenbosch University. Prof, not to make you jealous, but I'm going to be having lunch in Stellenbosch today. Just wanted to put that out there. And there's a certain ice cream parlor on the main road that I'll be visiting as well. So just before we went to ads, we were chatting about sort of why is it important. And one of the questions that I had put together in my research is, we're looking at what was previously available was either, non-reversible, hormonal, or the condom, and the changes that that has in the body, and that might affect people wanting to make that option. And I think with a contraception that you don't have to think about because it's always there and it's non-hormonal, so we're not looking at change in libido and mood and so on and energy levels. It's such a wonderful thing. So I'm not wanting to answer the question, but I also need to make sure that in my research that I don't get to understand something and then forget to ask it because now I know it. So your thoughts on a breakthrough like this in terms of freedom for men, but let's say particularly young men.
Yeah, so what you see is that more and more men are interested in taking responsibility along with women. There was, of course, for a long time, contraception was largely put on women. Now, women obviously are the most affected by pregnancy and also unwanted pregnancies. But men are more and more interested. And I think that goes hand in hand with the increase in options that they have. I know that the one of the people behind the development in the U.S., one of his goals is to promote this as a preventative measure, more in the along the lines of what you suggest. That you have this while you're young and you're not yet at an age where you're even thinking about having children, and then into a period that you say, okay, now I've got a family and or I want to start a family and I'm married or whatever the case may be, and then you reverse it. So that is sort of one of the ideas behind it, that you can insert these, they call it a device, the hydrogel. You insert that and you can leave it there until such time that you consciously make the decision that you want to be fertile again. Of course, from our side, from the polymer side, that is the main challenge. You want to put something inside the body that sits there, in principle, indefinitely, but upon a trigger, you want to, you know, within a couple of minutes or maybe an hour, it doesn't matter, but like on a very short notice, you want to be able to reverse it in a safe manner and in a reproducible manner. And that turns out to be actually scientifically quite a challenge.
If we touch on the science behind it, can you give us as much as possible a breakdown on sort of how it works? You mentioned a mesh that the fluid can get through that the sperm can't. What was the formulation like? And then the idea behind it saying, hey, you know, this could work for this specific thing.
It's a hydrogel. Now, hydrogel is a polymer that has a great affinity for water, therefore it swells, but it's not able to dissolve because there are certain links among the polymer chains that keep it from redissolving. Now, there are a couple of different versions of that. One is where you can look at polymer chains as a plate of spaghetti. You know, everything is intertwined and it's very difficult, as you know, if you would want to take one of those strings of spaghetti out of a plate, then it will probably break. And that's the same thing with polymers. So you cannot easily get that out. So that is one way of making a hydrogel so that just those entanglements among the chains sort of keeps it together. But that also makes it quite difficult to reverse. So what we are looking at is making it make the building block smaller and then tie everything together in a reversible manner, if that sort of makes sense. You know, that you've got certain points where you can deliberately cut those chains and now it becomes soluble again. That is sort of what we're aiming for and where we... Like I said, well, we also have that patent filed already.
So that cutting, that would be a chemical process, not something physical.
No, that's a chemical process. And that again, is one of the big challenges. Because if you would have asked me a couple of years ago, now I want to make a network that I just described, and I want to be able to redissolve it, that's not a problem. You just do this. But now I want to do this inside the body. Oh, well, that, of course, changes the whole ball game because now everything has to be biocompatible. The chemicals that you use have to be benign. The products that you form cannot be toxic, et cetera, et cetera. So there's a whole list of things that you have to now start worrying about. And that is sort of, one of the biggest challenges in this project.
Okay. Yeah, because that's such a big thing. When you're putting chemicals, you can put a safe chemical into the body, but if you alter it, you break it down, are those components still safe for people? And that's a lot of... And is this an ongoing and evolving science and product as well? Or sort of is it set that this is what the product will be? Or is there constantly updating?
We are still... I'm not easily satisfied when I make something. So what we're currently doing, we've got something that seems to work, and we tested it, with our American partners, and they were very impressed. But there were some things about what's called shelf life. You know, you've got the material that you want to inject, and it's sort of you want it to gel at the moment when it gets injected. And it turns out that if it stands on the shelf, it also starts to gel already prematurely. So this is something we are now looking into, you know, can we modify it in such a way that it is stable upon storage and that we can trigger the cross-linking, even though it's now more stable. And those are sort of ongoing parts of the research. I have one new student who's going to start in January on working on this. I've got a postdoc currently who's already working on it, who's continuing into next year. So it's a relatively small activity in the group, but it's has been ongoing now for the past, I guess, six or seven years. So yeah, it's a very interesting project to work on.
Mm-hmm. So actually what I wanted to ask a little bit off the subject, because I can see the big smiles, Prof, and this is what I'm like, how much fun is this for you? I mean, because if we have kids that are listening to this, perhaps that are considering going into the sciences, should they be looking at this as one of the fields as a career path? And how much fun do you have in the lab?
So the thing is, I like I said earlier, I started teaching first year chemistry, and in my very first lecture, I always tell the new students, you know, chemistry is actually a very creative discipline. You know, you've got an idea about something you want to achieve, and you make molecules to actually do that for you. And then, you know, after you design them, then you make them, and then after you've made them, you test them whether they have the properties that you're looking for, and then you start to sort of iterate and change the whole story. So it, and what I this reversible hydrogel I always use as an example, and they're always very sort of, wow, we had no idea that this was something that you can actually do with chemistry. So yeah, if you're interested in the natural sciences with a bio hint to it, and you're creative, you know, you like to sort of think and develop things, then chemistry is definitely a very interesting option for students.
Sure. And then just as an add-on to that question, and it's a bit of a silly question to ask, but I think it's a very important one. How important is it for the world that people are training as chemists and that we have this science evolving and developing?
Yeah, that also is a very good question. You've heard, of course, of the all the problems that plastics are causing, and this is what, of course, very close to what we do. Now, the hydrogels are probably a slightly different version, but it's still polymeric material, just like your plastic bags and everything. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the solution, I think, also lies in the chemistry, because if you think about how can you make a material that serves its purpose, but when you're done using it, it either degrades, or you can convert it into something else, or you can convert it back to its starting material so that it becomes a cyclic process. All of these processes are based on chemistry and need people who understand those processes and who can help developing materials for the future, I guess.
Absolutely. And, you know, if we look at the length of human history, I hope I'm not going too much off track with this, but it's fascinating. If we look at the length of human history, we basically had sort of, you know, leather and wood, and then we had iron. And then it's only in very recently, in terms of our evolution as a species, that chemistry has come into it. And I think the evolution has been very, very quick. And any problem that you grow up with as a child, so the young kids that are coming into varsity now that are looking at sort of like the Great Pacific Garbage Patch and saying, hey, what do we do? You know, sort of there's a lot of the beaches in Asia where these chemicals are washing up, the petroleum-based products. And then say, this is what they can do to break it down. And I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's, you know, it shows what we're capable of.
But you're also looking at renewable. You mentioned oil-based chemicals, and what we do currently in the lab is still for a large fraction oil-based. But more and more, the research shifts towards natural sources. For example, lignin from wood is very diverse in its structure and can be used for many, many applications. But again, it takes a lot of effort and a lot of research to bring it to that point where it can now be reproducibly used to make something useful out of.
And safely as well, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I suppose this leads me now to my next question. That's the biggest draw out of the time from concept to product is making it safe for people and making it safe for the world. Go ahead, Professor. Sorry.
Yeah. So in terms of safety, one of the things that you always have to look at is what we often do in a project like this would be, we've got an idea on how you can make a hydrogel. So you make a hydrogel, and the first version doesn't necessarily have to be, you know, benign chemistry. It doesn't necessarily have to be. You just want to prove a concept. You know, can I make something and then under similar conditions take it back to its original building blocks, for example? And then the next step will be, okay, but now it has to meet a whole list of criteria. Mm-hmm. And can I, can I do something like that as well? And then, so it's a multi-step process. It's never a sort of, let's do this. And in the first attempt, you've got now your ready-made product. It actually, in my experience, it never works like that.
Yes, 100%. So if we look at the practical use of this product, there's a gentleman who wants to now say, okay, I want to use this. What is the availability? Where is it available? Where is the procedure done? Where is it reversed? And what are the timelines around this?
Yeah, so I as far as I know, it's currently only available in, there are only two companies developing it actively to get. One, like I said, is already in the market. It's a company called Contraline, mm-hmm. and the product is called Adam. And then there is the company that we work with. It's Next Life Sciences, also in the US. And they, their product is called Plan A, Plan A for Men. And the gel is called Vasal Gel. And their product is currently undergoing clinical trials. As far as I know, both of them are at present only being developed in the US, but definitely with the intention to do it, to do a worldwide rollout eventually. Where it's applied, it's, like I said, it's a minimally invasive procedure because it needs to be injected into the vas deferens. So I would say it's done by a urologist, and the reversal is an injection into the gel that redissolves the gel. So it's, again, done by urologist. But it's the applying the gel is less invasive than actual vasectomy. And the reversal is definitely a lot less invasive than the reversal of a vasectomy.
Okay. And then with sort of the process with the application, is there then sort of a testing window where the patient is required to provide samples and so on? But I think, Prof, we're running out of time. We've got to go to ads. If we could answer that question after the ad break, and then we're just going to jump off the Zoom meeting and then back on because we've reached the 40-minute window. So we're going to leave and jump back on, and I'll see you after the ads, Prof.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
Welcome back. We are chatting with Professor Brett Kluperman, Distinguished Professor of Polymer Sciences at Stellenbosch University. I'm having an absolutely fantastic time chatting with you, Prof. It's awesome. I think I'm going to request they make the show 3 hours just for our listeners. Send your WhatsApp questions through to 061-895-1019. I do understand, particularly on a Jewish radio station and with a religious community that listens, this is not always something that, is something, but people do need option and choice. And I think also within in certain families, there's a very serious and real health component around this as well, where pregnancy can be life-threatening for the wife. So this is something that's so important. And again, something that's not going to be so drastic in the body in terms of hormone levels and its effect on the body. Just before we were chatting, we went to ads. We were talking about there's so many thoughts, questions going on in my head. I'm sort of losing a bit of track here. But we were chatting about sort of the process and the reversal and so on and availability. One thing I did want to ask as well was, do you have any sense of a timeline on the rollout? Or is this something that we may be looking at a few years?
Well, if I listen to Next Life Sciences, the people that we talk with regularly, they are really pushing it to, get all the approvals in place, et cetera, et cetera. And I think roll out from there, if I've got the timeline correct, I think their rollout will be end of next year, relatively soon, because, like I said, they're busy with the clinical trials. They've done, they've tested the device for injecting the gel. That went all very well. So now they're on a relatively short notice. They're going to do the actual test of the gel, which has already undergone several rounds of animal trials without any problems. So, yeah, I expect that end of next year, beginning of the year after, it will become available. And then how quickly that will also depend on availability of the material, etc. So, okay. It's difficult to predict, for me at least.
So, but this is, it's not something, for example, where large machines have to be built and shipped around the world to different doctors' practices. This is basically a product that can be manufactured and shipped, or even manufactured locally.
Yes. So there are two different things. The one is the device to inject the gel, because they have developed their own injection device, because obviously it's very important that you are putting the gel where it's supposed to be, like inside the vas deferens. Sure. And they've made a very I've seen a prototype of it, and it looked really, really interesting how they made it, you know, how they built in something so that they can probe that they're inside the vas deferens. And then you've got the gel itself, and is based on a existing material. So also there, I don't foresee too many hiccups in terms of availability.
Awesome. At the beginning, you sort of mentioned that men are lining up. What is your sense of the demand that's going to be for this product?
It's going to be huge, because if you see worldwide how many men take vasectomy, it's enormous. Mm. And then the number of people that don't do it because they say, well, you know, I'd love to, but I'm not 100% sure whether this is it for me in terms of kids. So now you offer an option where you can say, well, don't worry, take it. And if you want to be fertile again, we can reverse it. So I think it will be huge.
Absolutely. I think in terms of the change in society, societal norms, do you see this having an effect?
Yeah, I have little insight in that. I once visited a one-day symposium on male contraception, and there were quite a few studies into the sociological aspects of it. And they all seemed quite positive about the development of male contraceptives in a general sense. There were two technologies that, at that, this is now what, about 5 years ago, I think. The one was this hydrogel. The other one was a cream gel type material that contains hormones and that contains some other chemicals and that you have to apply daily, etc. Also, that had very positive effects, very positive outcomes, but it's still based on hormones. And I think there are lots of men that actually don't want to mess with that. Just like women are getting more and more reluctant about hormone-based contraceptive pills.
Yes, absolutely. And in terms of partner safety, I mean, obviously there's no separation of transmission with this product. So there's, you know, the one would still have to use a condom to be safe, and other safe sex practices.
Correct. It does not prevent sexually transmitted diseases from being transmitted.
Okay, and then also from a health aspect point of view, I think for a patient perhaps with a genetic condition from the male side where it would be too great a risk to have kids. This could be something that's far less traumatic to do than a vasectomy.
And that, so from again, I never had a vasectomy, but from what I hear is that there are negative side effects that quite a few men experience from vasectomy. And again, from what I hear is that the hydrogel, because it's semi-permeable, so it's not permeable for the cells, but it is permeable to fluid, those side effects are absent or at least much less.
Okay. And that all comes down to quality of life.
Exactly. Yes. That's 100% true, yes.
Yeah. Do you have an idea yet or an understanding in terms of cost versus a vasectomy for this procedure?
No, I didn't know. I have given up on estimating costs. it's impossible because because as you probably know, you can determine the cost to a customer, a client, in many different ways. You know, one is based on the materials that you use. One is based on the outcome that you get, and anything in between. And so, I'm not
and
even
a combination
gonna,
of both.
Exactly, I'm not even going to try.
Fair enough. I think if we look to the future with regards to polymers and the work that you're doing, is there things that you would like to see happening in terms of just, you know, benefit for the world, benefit for people from polymer science?
Yeah, so the I guess it's not a problem, but the thing is that polymers are everywhere. So, you know, if I look on the image behind you, the paint on
it's
the wall,
polymer.
The fabric of the curtains, everything is polymers.
Yep.
So it's very difficult to say. What you have seen over the past, I guess, decades is that polymers are getting more and more functional in terms of that it's not just the material, but it really serves a purpose. I think there are, in going into the future, there are two main things. One is the functionality, and one is, like I mentioned earlier, making sure that things that you get a circular economy and around polymers, so that you can recycle, reuse, etc.
Absolutely fantastic. We're going to go to an ad break now. When we come back, we're going to wrap up the show. I've had the most wonderful time chatting with you. It's been fantastic. Thank you. Let's go to adverts.
This is Medical Monday, brought to you with the compliments of Dis-Chem. Better health starts here.
We've had such a wonderful show chatting with Professor Brett Kruperman, distinguished professor and awesome professor of polymer science at Stellenbosch University. Prof, the one thing I was thinking about just as we wrap up, and I'd like your thoughts on that, I think in the 50s and 60s, the more complex a chemical's name could be in advertising, and with petroleum-based products, they had, you know, contains phenethylphenol, now we're sort of moving away, and as you mentioned, to plant-based polymers and looking back to nature. What would you like to see for the future of polymer science?
Yeah, so I think it's really important that in the longer run, you need to move away from petroleum-based chemicals simply because of availability. It's if you see the production rate at which chemicals or polymers are made, I'm referring back to my first year chemistry lectures. I'd say so. But actually, a different class, but doesn't matter. So if you look at the new polymer that's made annually, if you would build a wall around the world and you make it 1 meter wide, how high do you think it is? All the new polymer that is made in 1 year?
30 meters?
12 meters high.
Wow. Okay.
So around the world, that's an enormous amount of material, and every year again. So it's almost unsustainable to continue doing that without proper recycling and proper reuse, etc., in place. And there are many different ways to do that. You can also like really break it down to very small building blocks and then use it instead of oil as a feedstock into synthesis of new chemicals. So there are many different ways, but that needs a lot of attention. You know, if we want to continue producing polymers, but not just polymers, I mean chemicals in general sense.
Mm-hmm. Sure. So I think it's very important to consider the sciences. It's very important for kids who are at school to get into science, because this is what's going to create the building blocks for our future.
It is, and so what you can effectively do as a youngster now in school is say, well, I want to be, you know, part of, you know, developing a world that is sustainable, mm-hmm. and that can last for another couple of thousand years. So they can really contribute to that by developing smart technologies and smart materials, etc.
Absolutely fantastic. Professor, it's been absolutely wonderful talking to you. Thank you so much for joining us today on the show.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you. You've been listening to 101.9 High FM. It's the Dis-Chem Medical Monday show. Thank you, Craig, for producing. Thank you to Sina for finding us fantastic guests like the professor. My name is Nicholas Ingle, and I look forward to chatting with you next week.